This is The Reason Interview, and I'm Nick Gillespie. We've got a great podcast for you today. Reason Editor-at-Large Matt Welch talks with former Republican congressman and talk show host Joe Walsh, who is currently mounting a long-odds primary challenge against President Donald Trump. Walsh, who served one term in the House representing Illinois' 8th District, used to be one of Trump's biggest supporters. He was MAGA all the way. Now he says that Trump is a liar, a bully, a racist, and completely unfit for office. In fact, the one-time Tea Party favorite called for Trump's impeachment after the Mueller report came out. Matt talks with Walsh about his own role as a hype man for Trump, the decline of the Tea Party, his own past racist comments about Barack Obama, and the role of libertarian ideas in pointing out how far the Republican Party has gone astray on issues such as trade, debt, and spending. But before we get to that interview, I want to tell you about a great new podcast series. It's from the good folks over at the Institute for Justice, so you know it's going to be top drawer stuff. It's called Bound by Oath, and it features interviews with historians, legal scholars, and the real people involved in historic and contemporary Supreme Court cases. Bound by Oath. Go check it out. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Last time I saw you were getting speed-backed on Bill Maher. How was that for you?
And by the way, thank you, Matt, because you jumped in about the eighth inning and reminded Mr. Maher that I am running as a Republican.
I mean, I wasn't for your benefit,
I know.
To be clear. But no, that's an interesting, I think there's actually something interesting to ponder in that, because it's a pattern that we've seen with a lot of Republicans or conservatives who criticize Donald Trump, is that they are immediately pilloried by the left for not going far enough, or to have been complicit, or to be Republican, to think that Neil Gorsuch is a decent justice, which most conservatives do, right? But like, what does that say to you about kind of the intensity of the polarized sorting that we're kind of going through?
It's right now? I've said this before, Matt. You know this. You've probably said this. Trump did not divide America. We were divided before Trump. In fact, I think the divide got Trump elected. What's weird, though, is when I went to Congress before Trump, the divide was on our side. Where are you on the issues? Are you a rhino, or are you a real freedom-loving conservative? That was the divide. Now the divide is, where are you on Trump? I haven't changed on a damn issue. Maybe there's one or two. Maybe since I went to Congress, I've softened on some things. But I really am the same Tea Party, loud, outspoken Tea Party true believer that I was before Trump. But because I am anti-Trump, I'm now called a rhino, an establishment Republican, a socialist, anything else. So that's the new dividing line.
Back in 2009, 2010, I went to a fair number of the initial kind of Tea Party gatherings, rallies in Washington. I went kind of as a skeptic, not being a Republican, and I've always had a really sensitive ear towards, maybe oversensitive ear towards expressions of sort of racism or group hostility. So I went looking for that. And in a crowd of 100,000, you could find a couple of posters, but that's not what people were about then.
No.
And at the time, I went on PBS, MSNBC, kind of defending the Tea Party against charges of racism.
Yep.
Was I wrong?
No.
Were you wrong about that?
God, no.
Because, I mean, a lot of the Tea Party, the people who identified themselves as Tea Party, are not doing what you're doing right now. They are following Trump. They have created the new dividing line. So what is that?
Well, Matt, the Tea Party's in hibernation right now. Trump's kind of squashed it. But to your question, to your original point, look, I think the Tea Party was all singularly obsessed, focused at the beginning with the size of government and all of this debt. And of your 100,000 people in the crowd, 99% of them were there. A lot of grandmoms and grandpa. I mean, skewed a white crowd, but a middle-aged, older white crowd concerned about the bankrupting of this country.
And we're not talking about immigration. They just
not
weren't.
At
I went.
All.
I went looking for people
Back
talking about welfare and immigration. I did because I presume. Well, I mean, in any large group of people, regardless, you're going to have strange humans. But I was curious whether this is sort of a backlash against a black president, which was a common critique at the time. But now I'm wondering whether I was wrong, whether I missed on something. because, you know, there's an element of that that coalesced into support behind a damned birther.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Technically, the Tea Party began pre-Obama.
There's the Ron Paul element of the Tea Party from 2007.
The George W. Bush and the bailouts and all of that stuff.
Right. There's a bit of energy both associated with Ron Paul, but also specifically at the bailout vote in the fall of 2008. Right. And then I think Rick Santelli got off his rant in early 2009.
But then you're right, Matt. There's no doubt when Obama became president, then it ratcheted up. And I will still argue at the beginning, and certainly when I went to Congress, it was all about both parties were pissed off at both parties for spending all of this money. And then I think that the Tea Party people out here realized what I realized in about a week in Washington was Republican Party didn't give a damn about what I was saying. I mean, we went there, Matt, with gusto and John Boehner and Eric Cantor and all these guys. They basically said, this is Washington, boys and girls. We don't talk that way. So I think the Tea Party voters out there got pretty frustrated after 2 or 3 years when we didn't repeal Obamacare. We didn't stop the growth of government. And so the movement just kind of dissipated. And then all the Tea Party people did while Obama was president in Congress was just scream and rail, but they didn't do anything. Perfect fertile ground for a demagogue like Trump to come around and grab him.
Thomas Massie has a theory about this. He talks about going to Iowa and campaigning for Rand Paul back when Rand was running for president and assuming, hey, look, all these, you know, Tea Party voters, especially in Kentucky, which, you know, there's quite a few pretty interesting libertarian-leaning politicians who have arisen out of there. You know, great. They're really interested in the ideas. They're interested in limiting government. They're interested in being anti-war. A lot of things like that. Let's go to Iowa. You know, we have a built-in group. Here we go. And all they wanted to do is talk about Donald Trump. And his theory was maybe back in 2009 and 10, it wasn't as much about the ideas as we thought. Maybe they were just looking for the craziest son of a bitch in a room. And for a while, it was us. And then we got out crazied. And then people went in that direction.
So along with that, if I were to co-opt Massey's theory a little bit, I think with hindsight now, they were looking for people to fight for them. And these people out here are scared. Life is changing. We're losing jobs. Coal's leaving. Manufacturing's leaving. And so I think a lot of people are scared. And they thought we would fight for them. And again, those of us who went to Washington tried, but we didn't do shit. So then along comes this big oaf who says, I'm going to fight for you. It almost doesn't matter what the issue was.
There's a lot of different things that we can kind of spring from there. But let's just start with you and Trump. Did you not vote for the guy in 2016?
Yes. Yes.
And I mean, you were out of Congress your one term.
Yes. All right. On the radio.
On the radio. So you're doing radio all day long. You're presumably defending the Republican president that you've just voted for. Your critique against him, the kind of idea of your candidacy, is actually not to talk about those issues, the underlying issues, but to talk about the character of the president.
So I voted for him. I was a Rand Paul guy in the primary. Once Trump became the nominee, I supported him unenthusiastically. He blocked me on Twitter back then. I criticized him. I criticized him during the campaign, that first campaign. So he blocked me on Twitter.
What'd you criticize him for?
I think what he said about McCain. That was early. Like, I think that was that fall, maybe, Matt.
Yeah, it was
15.
The ones who didn't get caught. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Man, here's what I thought. And if I deserve to be slapped, as Bill Maher wanted to do, I deserve to be slapped. I never liked Trump. I'm older than you, but I never followed him in the 80s and 90s. I could have cared less about him. I did truly figure he was a blowhard and an oaf. I figured maybe a couple good things might happen. I figured maybe he'd appoint a couple good people. We'd get some D-rag. Maybe we'd get a Neil Gorsuch, a couple things. He wasn't Hillary. It was a pretty safe bet for me. I can't lie. Most of my audience, they're the mega hat wearing guys who loved him. At that time, did I want to totally alienate my audience? No. So I kind of went along.
All right. So there are incentives there. I mean, you have to come up with some pretty good theory to swim or to row furiously against
absolutely.
The current
absolutely.
In this case, which, you know, might explain a lot of behavior that we see not just in Congress among Republicans, but also in the kind of media ecosphere out there.
In fact, I would argue, Matt, since I've been in both worlds, I think it's a hell of a lot more difficult in the age of Trump to survive as a never-Trumper in the media world, conservative media world, than it is in Congress. because every day, week, and month that I was on talk radio these last 2 years, they've been busting my balls. You got to line up. You got to support them. We want all our guys supporting them, and I wouldn't. If you're in Congress, you have to face that music maybe once every 2 years.
The rejoinder to that, that I can already hear people say, like, oh, yeah, it's so hard for you going on Bill Maher, you know, Max Boot. You know, we see him all over the damn place. David Frum. These people never go away. They get promoted. Brett Stevens. They all, you know, they seem to be doing just fine because they're the liberal media's favorite conservatives because they hate Trump.
And I know you know that's bullshit. And that's bullshit because, again, just on its face. I walked away from a radio show that was on 94 stations. I mean, just on its face, Matt, if I cared about like ratings, money, and fame, I'd have been Sean Hannity, Seb Gorka from the beginning. That's, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. But I mean, that's where it's at. Every day you say Trump walks on water, I'm really good on the radio. I'd be on 300 stations if I went along with that plan 2 years ago. Now, yeah, I get to go on CNN now and MSNBC, but there's no future there for me. When this election's done, I'm still who I am. MSNBC's not going to hire a guy like me.
You don't think?
No, well, why? They wouldn't. I don't think guys like you and I would get regular.
I'm on there regularly, but I'm certainly not paid for it, let's say. But let's keep my, you know, faulty career choices out of this for the moment. But no, I mean, so you voted for Trump.
Yeah.
It was a hedge. You didn't do it with enthusiasm.
Right.
But you did vote for him and you did professionally say things, you know, kind of.
Yes.
And since your critique is fundamentally about
him.
Character and fitness
him.
And him and not about issues, what do we know now that we didn't know in 2016?
So I'm going to answer you and you won't like the answer.
That's good.
Almost every time he opens his mouth, he lies. And your retort to that would be, we probably knew that 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I didn't. I didn't pay attention to that. Matt, I figured.
Even during the campaign, he was full of dookie during the campaign.
I thought he was just an effing blowhard. I didn't think he'd lie about everything big and small. And from the moment he got elected and he lied about his crowd size and it just took off from there. So, again, I fear government. I don't like government. If I have a president who lies to me every day, I can't support that. So pretty quickly that first year, I realized he lies almost every time he opens his mouth. And then the other thing, like I say on the trail, he's unfit. I believe he's unfit. Why do I believe he's unfit? Because he has no relationship to the truth and he does not care about anything but himself. He doesn't care about America. He puts himself ahead of everything. That's dangerous. That's a malignant narcissist, whatever it is, but that's dangerous.
So what does it say about first, we were talking about the Tea Party before,
yeah.
But what does it say about the Republican Party that in a crowded field with some talented candidates, this was the one that they wanted? And what does it say about America that enough of Americans said this is what?
Because the Republican Party sucks. Those 15 or 16 candidates back then, Cruz, Rubio, Paul, Jeb, all of them. Look, Trump got elected, I think, for about 3 or 4 reasons, but related to the Republican Party, Trump got elected because some of us Tea Party people got way out there with our rhetoric. That helped lead to Trump. But then an absolutely out of touch, feckless, weak Republican Party establishment got him elected. Cruz, Rubio, Jeb, all these guys, they had no idea at all that the one issue that animated Republican voters is, I don't want anybody in my country illegally. It's not right. It's not fair. And it's costing me money. That issue, Matt, more than anything, pisses off my base, my listeners, my voters. That issue got Trump elected. Trump's the only one who touched that issue. Remember Rubio ran like he tried to run a Morning in America campaign again. They were so out of touch. Donald Trump said, boom, that's bad. Nobody should be here. I'm going to build a wall. Mexico's going to pay for it. Away he went.
Well, so you have, you know, that's your listeners wanted that. And certainly, you know, I for the last 25 years, conservative talk radio has made those exact points over and over again. And in doing so, I would argue
the party ignored it.
Party yeah. did ignore it. Mitt Romney ran more of as a restrictionist than the Republican Party had seen in generations. I mean, he was doing self-deportation. He yeah. hired Chris Kobach to be his yeah. main dude. He tried in 2008 and almost succeeded in getting himself back in the race by shivving Giuliani in the ribs yeah. on this, on McCain. Like, McCain had to run away. So, like, yeah. they heard yeah. the footsteps. They heard yeah. the buffaloes roam. But is there not at some point responsibility to be had? Yes, okay, the elites out of touch didn't understand this. Yes. At the same time, the populists are creating a picture, are creating a desire that cannot possibly be met.
Yes.
You cannot seal the border. You can't do it. And if you did it, you'd become a police state.
Yes.
So what virtue is it in there to overly pander to a desire that can't be met and that in the meeting of it is going to lead to all kinds of really awful policy?
No, Matt, I don't disagree. I think it's a real issue. I think if you're a sovereign nation, you should have secure borders. And if a country doesn't, if a country decides to open their borders, then do that legislatively. So it's a legit issue. It's an issue I believe in. Trump just demagogued it to death. And the masses wanted to hear it demagogued.
Yeah, they wanted
build
to hear it
demagogued. Build the wall, make Mexico pay for it, nobody in.
Yeah. Just before we leave the subject of immigration, yeah. what is your kind of global concept of a policy that you would like to see?
Well, I want, you're right, you can't seal the border. Secure it as best as you can. Separate from that, we're always going to have an asylum issue. So the government ought to deal with that in a very fast, humane way. That's separate from, you know, the border issue. And then we've got this problem of people who are in here, this country illegally, some for legit reasons. Both parties are going to have to come together and figure out a legislative solution for the Dreamers and other cohorts within that.
And the amount of legal immigration, do you think up, down?
Whatever. I tend to be the more the merrier.
Okay.
It's good for us.
So let's get back to you and your feelings.
Yeah.
Which is to say, at some point, I mean, I get the reasons why a run needs to be made at Trump, or the argument for competing against Trump and the theory of going after his fitness. I understand the lane that you're in, which is more conservative, more at least populist in kind of rhetoric or tone or feel yeah. than you're going to get from Mark Sanford and certainly from Bill Weld. But what I don't understand yet is why you felt like you needed to yeah. make this switch. Yeah. So what was it? Did you have some kind of...
Because I'm certainly not the perfect candidate.
Well, no, I'll makes say it kind of interesting.
I'll you say know? That. Here's the weird thing here. Look, I care about the debt as much as Sanford does. That's why I went to Washington. I'm pretty close to you in that I'm a real libertarian, limited government conservative. So Trump's issues piss me off. The tariffs are horrible. The debt sucks. There's a lot of things he's doing that I don't like. I just don't think you don't do what I'm doing. Giving up my life, and this is difficult if you're upset about an issue, the debt with Trump. The weird thing is Trump and I come from the same place. I come from a populist Tea Party pool, kind of that melding of. I say it all the time. Trump's voters literally were my voters. Trump's voters are the people who've been listening to me every day for the last 6 years. They are people who loved me until I did this. So I come from that same place. So I guess the case I'm trying to make is, if you want conservative shit and you want conservative policy, you'll get it from me. You just won't get all this hate, all this bigotry, all the danger, all the unpatriotism, all the daily drama that we're getting with Trump.
Again, it's a perfectly comprehensible intellectual case for it. But why are you doing it?
I want to win, and I don't want him to be the nominee. See, that's always, hey, Matt, that's always a great question. I'm asked it all the time. Why are you doing it? You want to get on MSNBC, you want to advance an issue. I'm doing it to win. I mean this straight up. Why would anybody do what I'm doing if they didn't want to win? Period. I'm doing it to win. I want to be the nominee and I don't want Trump to be.
Was there a moment or series of moments?
And by the way, Matt, again, there could be a better candidate than me. I had waited all year for somebody to make this case. It's not Bill Weld. He's a nice guy, but he's not going to make this case. Mark Sanford, forget about it. He's running to talk about the debt. I was waiting for somebody all year to say, he's unfit, he's bad for our party, he's bad for the country. Nobody did it. I wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, and I said that. He's unfit, somebody's got to challenge him.
who would have that been for you?
It's a great question.
Mitt Romney? Is it a Ben Sasse? Is it a Jeff Flake? Couldn't be Jeff Flake anymore. He's sort of drummed out. But like, who? What's the archetype of the type of person who's better than Joe Walsh? Not better, but has a bigger national profile maybe, and could have been a real challenge.
I think someone who, and I may not give you a name, but someone who can meld the Matt Welch's of the world.
Nice.
Hold on. And the Joe Walsh more Tea Party populist. Someone who can meld what you and I believe in with this populist fervor that is there regardless of Trump, and it's not going away. I love Mitt Romney and I love John Kasich. That's not them.
Now, the 2016 happens, and it's a big deal, not just in terms of Trump and, yeah. and how like he can sort of overhaul the Republican Party or, you know, sort of a hostile takeover on some level. But Bernie Sanders almost accomplishes the same thing in the Democratic side.
Yes.
There's a thirst for populism out there on both sides. And Bernie certainly has pulled the party in his direction, even if he's not going to reap the fruits of it probably in the nomination cycle
right.
this time around. But so there is a very, very proven market for serious amounts of populism right now. Donald Trump's last approval ratings on Gallup tied his high. It's a 91% among Republicans here. You guys combined when you're polled against Trump are losing by 70 percentage points. What gives you any indication that there is an audience out there or a climate out there that wants to see this avatar of populism, this lightning rod for this thing, defeated and someone else like you elevated?
You're talking about among Republicans.
Even more, even bigger in the whole country, really. But I mean, yes, among the kind of people who might vote in Republican primaries, since that's the contest in front of you.
I think that support, that 90% Republican support for Trump, I think it's soft. And I think that most Republicans, I don't know if they'll act on this, but I'm convinced that most Republicans are where I am right now with Trump. Well, they're not quite where I am. Like, I won't vote for him no matter what. Most are where I was 2 years ago. I'm tired of him. I hate all the bullshit. I hate waking up every morning and he fires off a tweet insulting some American. I'm tired of that, but I don't see an alternative. I wish some of the good things he's done somebody else could do and we wouldn't get all the shit. I think that's where most Republicans are.
Even though...
And there's no alternative.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had a rock star, I think I'm a pretty damn good candidate, but my name ID is still way down here. So if there was a really well-known alternative to him who could present this, I will give you the good stuff that you and I know we both want. This guy is a horrible role model who doesn't believe in the rule of law and the Constitution.
Is it possible that nor do Americans?
Ha. Well, which is part of what's always frightening about populist movements is oftentimes they shed some things that they some higher principles that supposedly they believed in. I don't know. You could be right.
Want to try to get a sense of timing on this. I know that by June 2018, you're calling Trump a traitor for his
Helsinki
moment with Vladimir Putin. But when did you sort of first get the inklings that, hey, there's something wrong with this? I actually already answered that with the crowd signs. But when was it decisive? When was it like, okay, that's it. This is the psychotic break. I cannot deal with this guy anymore. I'm going to be in opposition from now on.
So three things. And again, it was difficult in my position. But three things. When he first got elected and it became clear and we all found out what we all kind of knew, that Russia screwed the election and they helped get him elected. Donald Trump's first instinct after he won was to call that BS because he didn't want his victory tarnished. So on day one, he put his own interests ahead of the country's. I never got over that. And for that first year of his presidency, I did my best to do the Ben Shapiro good Trump, bad Trump thing. I'd give him a hug when I thought he did something right and I'd criticize him when he didn't. But then on top of the Russia thing, you pile on all the lying, and the Russia thing then culminated for me at Helsinki in June of 18. I was pretty much, Matt, I had a big old foot out the door before Helsinki. I remember that morning I was at home. I watched that press conference with my dogs in the living room with me, and I went ballistic. I accused him of treason. wrong, because Bill Weld did that yesterday, and you can't do that. That's wrong. That was it. I went to bed that night saying, I'll never support him again. I'll never vote for him. And then what I did on the radio was, every day it just became more and more bad Trump, till this last year, it's been a never Trump radio show, and I've been hanging on by my bootstraps to try to keep the show.
What is a, if any, kind of theoretical or historical model for what you're doing? Has there been a either Republican or somehow, you know, a Democratic primary challenge to an incumbent that you look at as, okay, that path is interesting, or there's something about that model that I can replicate or tap into?
So the first name that leaps out is Buchanan 92, though that was issue based. George H.W. attacked from the right based on issues. I'm attacking Trump from the right, but I'm going at him. So it's a more difficult road to take.
So something like,
I don't know, maybe there's a
Pete McCloskey against Richard Nixon, although that was more of an anti-war thing in 1972. And there's a dude from Ohio, too, who went after him from the right that spring, whose name I forget.
So it's not really issue-based, which makes it a tougher sell to Republican voters.
Yeah.
Because I have to look him in the eyes and say, come on, you and I were kind.
Well, I mean, sometimes I catch you on the TV and, boy, it sounds like you're not necessarily competing in a Republican primary. Or if you are, it's a weird way to call Republicans a bunch of bootlickers and people who, you know, are hobnobbing with dictators and this types of things. Is it a Viking funeral on some level? Or are you finding yourself like consumed with disgust over what the GOP has become?
I oftentimes blur the line of who I'm speaking about and who I'm speaking to. I attack the Republican Party establishment, the organization, the party bosses all the time. Oftentimes on TV, I'll go at the Republican Party, and a lot of people think I'm talking about voters. What I'm trying to do with my campaign is go right to voters. I was in New Hampshire 2 weeks ago, and Matt, I swear to God, I spoke to probably 130 Republicans over the course of 2 hours, and damn near everyone said the same thing. I'm tired of him. I wish there was somebody else to vote for, but if there's not, the Democrats are socialists. So then my thing is, okay, well, then if there is an alternative, but that it's hard to become that alternative.
So you came out in favor of impeachment in March or April, or like right when
Mueller report,
like within 24 hours, or, you know, like
right after I read it.
Okay, right after you read it. Not a lot of people came to that same conclusion, even those who are not in office. So what did you see in there that they didn't, and or how do you overcome the objection of, hey, yes, in part two, he acted very badly without question, but what we're talking about is we nab him on obstruction into an investigation over a crime that he probably didn't commit in terms of collusion.
And you don't have to commit that crime to obstruct.
True. True, but like from a kind of a Democratic small d point of view,
right?
Like to sell that idea to the American people, we're going to get it feels like a ticky tack foul to a lot of people. Like you have a highly motivated set of people who want to investigate every crevice of this administration, and so they got him on this. It's basically like it's a perjury trap essentially.
Well,
how do you overcome that?
And you and I, my libertarian friend, we may differ. I think I know where you may be on the whole Russia.
I'm not sure. I know. I'm still trying to figure it out.
I, as libertarian as I am, I believe in our intelligence community, and I believe by and large they do good work. And Trump's war against the intelligence community from day one pissed me off royally. Again, unpatriotic, disloyal, but selfish, because everything Trump does is because of Trump. He's pissed off at them because look at me, I won. You read the Mueller report, and I don't gloss over the first chapter. There was collusion. The president of the United States, then candidate Trump, welcomed and encouraged Russian interference. There's example after example of not collusion to rise to a coordinated conspiracy, but there was examples of collusion there. And as a candidate, he welcomed and encouraged Russian interference. By the way, not surprising, he did what he did with the Ukraine president when it comes out. And then, yeah, then and it, so you've got that, Matt. You've got a president who was doing business with Russia while he's running for president, and he lies to the American people about it. And then you've got a guy who lied and then ordered people around him to lie. And then you've got a guy who obstructed justice at every turn. I mean, if that stuff's not. And I think Mueller punted. I think Mueller gave it to Congress and said, you know what this is.
Yeah. I mean, the
do you?
There's an argument to be had that we have this kind of long running pathology where we're. The legislative branch is just coughing up power to the executive branch.
Absolutely.
Right and left.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about, hey, look, this is a legislative branch solution. That is how this thing is written.
Yeah.
We know that. And we also know that the legislature, regardless of who runs it at any given time, is absolutely feckless and powerless and not interesting. So like he might well have been doing his proper role by that punt. Because it's not up to Robert Mueller.
Agreed.
What happens.
Agreed.
Don't want to leave one strand out of that. You're talking about the intelligence community. Is it possible, or is it a possible concern that the intelligence community or individual actors within it, even higher officials, are simply using a combination of two factors, one being their kind of instinctive revulsion at the manners of this boorish outsider who colors outside the line at every opportunity, including insulting them and doing a bunch of stuff. So they're using a combination of that revulsion, their own sense of patriotism, doing what's right for the country, and also their kind of broad leeway and sort of unchecked ability to influence events and do investigations, where it's sort of like a classic Shakespearean tragedy. Everyone's acting according to how you would expect them to act.
Yes.
And yet maybe they're just getting him on coloring outside the lines instead of something that is, or maybe they're overweighing their investigative powers against a guy just because they find him to be creepy.
All of that's possible. Some of that's probable. And like you and I always want to check on the executive branch, and we want to check on all federal government power. We want to check on our agencies as well. I get all of that. But I guess, Matt, it goes to what you believe at the beginning. I believe that our intelligence community was handed this during the 16 campaign. Oh, my God, look what Russia's doing. We've never seen something like this before. I don't think they exactly knew how to handle it. But then I go back to that again. Trump's just such a bad guy. You get elected. You're the president. You find out that Russia screwed with our election to help get you elected. Donald Trump right now would be a god if on day one after he got elected, he said, time out. That can't happen. This can't happen. I'm going to lead the investigation into what Russia did. If Trump had done that and put right after he got elected, right, assuming no collusion, Trump didn't do anything wrong. I will lead the investigation. Our country was attacked. Donald Trump would be at an 80% approval rating right now. He'd be a god.
That is an interesting theory.
It's not who he is.
It's not who he is. So we're recording this on Tuesday, September 23rd, right?
Yep.
It's the same day that you're going to do.
24th.
Is it 24th?
Yeah.
Listeners will have access to this on Thursday, the 26th. Tonight, again, on the 24th, is going to be a debate between you and Bill Weld. Sadly, the president couldn't make it, nor could Mark Sanford. Insert your Appalachian Trail joke here. I say that out of affection to Mark Sanford, who's a good guy. But the world is consumed with impeachment once again now. So you were in favor of impeachment after reading the Mueller report. Now it's all about the president calling up the newly elected president of Ukraine and talking to him about investigating Joe Biden over his son Hunter Biden being on the board of a gas firm.
Right.
What is your take on that series of events and what it tells us on whether it itself is impeachable and so on?
If true, it's just the cherry on top from my perspective, because I read the Mueller report 5 months ago. Donald Trump should be impeached. If what Trump is alleged to have done, in my mind, that's an impeachable offense. You use your taxpayer-funded office to benefit. You hold up tax dollars to benefit you personally. You ask the president of a foreign government to interfere in our 2020 election. You ask, pressure, or tell. I mean, that's collusion. Okay, so there's your collusion. Matt, again, if that's not impeachable, if that's not, if that's not corrupt, if that's not an abuse of your power, I don't know what is.
We were joking before we started rolling tape that, looks like Democrats are going to go through it this time. At least that's what the preliminary reporting is in that. There's a lot of like, oh, the dam's breaking now kind of stuff. And I've learned to be a little bit skeptical of that breathlessness with which people treat, their wish fulfillment of Trump's mm-hmm. impeachment. But we were joking before that assuming this goes through, it probably helps Trump. Like, politically, what do you do with that kind of knowledge that 91% of Republicans might turn to 97% of Republicans as they circle their wagons around president?
So the fear is it may hurt somebody like me in the primary challenge him. Because you're right, maybe Republicans will circle the wagons. Though, again, you balance that with what I said about 5 or 6 minutes ago. I think if you ask most Republican voters, do you want 4 more years of this drama? Most Republican voters will say no. And I think there's a sizable percentage of Republican voters who will be repulsed by. I've seen some of the polling on this across party. Most Americans do not at all approve of a president doing this, literally colluding. So, but I don't think if Trump's the Republican nominee, I don't think it helps him in the general election. But it could make the Republican primary difficult or interesting.
Could make it difficult. Do you see, having witnessed the way that elected Republican officials have behaved in the Trump era, including some of your former colleagues, the Jim Jordans of the world, people who started off as big critics of executive power and of an unchecked president, you know, trying to run his own investigations, and gone from there to being, the lead attack dog against anyone who would act as the modern day Jim Jordan. Looking at that, do you see in any kind of crystal ball, or do you imagine a scenario by which Republicans in the Senate would deviate from this in any meaningful way in an impeachment process?
No way Republicans in the House. I see Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, my former buddies, that this just galvanizing them. And that makes me very sad. I think that if it's proven that Trump pressured a foreign president to interfere in our election, I think you'll see a few Republican senators peel off. If it's proven that there's a real, clear, obvious quid pro quo, and I don't think there needs to be a quid pro quo, I think you'll get more peel off. But I do not think you'll see the Senate probably ever act.
So we started off talking about Bill Maher a little bit.
Yeah.
And the sort of speed bag. There's an element of your campaign so far, at least the media aspect of it. It's a bit of an apology tour. Where it's like you're expiating here your sins of what you described earlier as sort of the looser hinged rhetoric of the Tea Party. You were a grown ass man during all of that.
Wasn't that long ago?
Why was a grown ass man saying crap like this?
Well, and to answer that, let me just say this: the context is, I was a grown ass man back then. I planted myself at the tip of the spear for the last 8 to 9 years. Very outspoken. I did that on purpose. 66,000 tweets from the moment I discovered Twitter back in 2013. So, I mean, I put myself out there. So what I don't ever want, what's weird about this, Matt, I don't want to give the impression that this is all Joe Walsh does. Every day, Joe Walsh for the last 6 years was calling Barack Obama a Muslim. I don't want that. We're talking about exceptions. But if, again, as I've said before, if you looked at my 66,000 tweets, you'd find 300 that you'd want to throw at me.
Which is like a good 297 more than mine.
but would you acknowledge, and you and I have had different roles these last 8 to 9 years. Who was I with? Somebody else. John Heilman. I was on the circus this past. He said the same thing. He said, Joe, you wouldn't find 10 tweets. I said, John, you and I serve different roles. My job has been to push ideas I believe in. My job has been to provoke people, to get people to think, to piss people off. In doing that, and that's controversial to begin with. Certainly not something a typical politician does. But doing that, yes, plenty of times where I went over the line. And all I can do is, the best way to do this is you and I have a discussion and you put 20 of the Joe Walsh's greatest hits in front of me. Some I will legit apologize for, like Barack Obama is a Muslim, the most horrible thing I've ever said. Some I'll explain. No, this is the point I was trying to make. But I'll own all of them. Final thing I'll say, Matt, I'm guilty as hell for being part of a conservative media swamp. Whose goal was to be as outrageous as you can be. And I fell prey to that. I think it goes on both sides.
Yes, it does, although I think it's not precisely symmetrical, although nothing is in this world. But is that not part of the problem, right? So this, it's not just sort of you. It's that particular swamp. But you're not going to suddenly say, you know what, let's unplug all the radios. I mean, this is there's a market for it. There's now, almost three decades worth of a culture that's associated, a media culture that's associated with it.
Yes.
An ecosystem Trump plays up against. He also plays against it in interesting ways that we've already forgotten. Yeah. He basically broke the will of Fox News in 2016 with Megyn Kelly, which was an interesting turn. And he can do that on the drop of a hat even now, you know, and I presume he will. But what do you do about that fact? Is that like the existence of that ecosystem, that swamp?
So what I chose to do, Matt, was to extricate myself from that swamp. And if you looked at the history of Joe Walsh and you listened to me on the radio over the last 6 years, you'd hear a noticeably different voice the last year and a half to two. About a year and a half ago, I made a conscious decision. What the fuck? I hate some of the thing. I hate what I hear. I hate some of the back and forth with listeners. And if you looked at my Twitter feed the last year and a half, you'd still find a few stray, offensive, idiotic tweets, but God, no, not the volume that you would have seen 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. I grew disgusted with it. And I'm telling you this, Matt, whether I run for president or not, there's no way I survive on talk radio. I was going to lose my show no matter what, I believe. Not only because I wasn't sufficiently pro-Trump, I didn't want to engage in that hateful shit anymore.
So are part of what you're doing now some kind of, conversion therapy or like or reaching out to people and saying, hey, look, we can still have a completely animated and hilarious conversation.
Yes.
We just don't need to do a couple of these sort of slightly excessive hyperbolic or rhetorical things over here.
I ain't going back. Like people ask me that, oh, Joe, when you lose, you're just going to go back to conservative talk radio. I ain't going back. I'll never talk the way Joe Walsh talked 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. I don't want to. If I end up on a farm with my dogs for the rest of my life, I'll do it. I don't want to go back there. 5 years ago, Joe Walsh would have said, as I argued about Barack Obama about something, Barack Obama hates America because he believes in different things than me. He hates America. I don't say that now. AOC and Ilhan Omar and these congresswomen who I disagree with vehemently on the issues, the last 2 years on the radio, I would say they don't hate America. They just believe in a different America than I do. That did not go over well with my audience, but that's where I am now.
So you said that you're not going to vote for Donald Trump. That includes in the general election under any circumstances?
Never. No.
Will you vote for a Democrat if it comes to it?
I doubt it.
Yeah. You're registered still in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
So they're going to vote Democrat by 15 to 20 percentage points.
So my vote doesn't matter in Illinois.
So you're going to vote for the Libertarian Party? Is that what I'm hearing? Do you want to make an announcement right now?
It depends on who that is, Matt. If it's you, that's an interesting thought. But no, I can't imagine voting for a Democrat. I will not vote for Trump. I will vote. So what am I left with?
Yeah. Anybody of particular interest, either in terms of being alarmed by or intrigued by in the Democratic field?
I think there's some great candidates. I think Elizabeth Warren's a rock star. At the beginning, I thought Kamala Harris was a rock star, but she doesn't stand for anything. Elizabeth Warren does. Again, I disagree with her politics. I think she'll probably be the nominee. I think the resistance to Trump is profound. I think Democrats are gun shy because they got spanked in 16. They kicked our ass in 2018. It was a referendum on Trump. I think Elizabeth Warren, if she's the nominee, would destroy Donald Trump. I mean, destroy.
What is your going theory about what happens then? So Trump runs, he loses, regardless of impeachment.
He doesn't go away.
What happens to the party? Is that, I mean, there's a lot of people make the analogy of what the Republicans are doing nationally right now is similar to what Californian Republicans did in the early 1990s with Pete Wilson, kind of salted the earth. They thought, hey, we got a temporary victory here by running a pretty strongly kind of populist anti-immigration campaign.
Yeah.
And then, whoops, no more Republicans unless you're named Schwarzenegger. Well, what's your theory about what a post-Trump presidency National Republican Party looks like, assuming for the sake of this argument that somehow you don't win the primary?
I think it's bleak. I won't give you names, but I have plenty of my former colleagues in Congress who believe Trump's going to lose in 2020. They want him to lose. And then they believe we can just go back to where we were. Trump's not leaving. His voting base is going to be like messed up. And the Republican Party, that's why I think it's so important that you stake this ground now. They're not going to be able to pick up the pieces. I think the party is lost for a long, long time, unless they stand for things we believe in now. If Rubio and Cruz and these guys came out now and said, this is what we believe as Republicans. We believe in the rule of law. We believe in limited government. We believe in a restrained executive. Then there's hope for the party. But they won't do that.
Do you find, is it a coincidence or is there some kind of logic at play that the three guys, the three stooges who are running against Trump, which is a pretty good one. He hadn't had a good one in a while. That was pretty good. Are running are a guy who, you know, ran as the Libertarian Party vice president last time, a guy, Mark Sanford, who's described himself as a libertarian. And you've said that you're sort of libertarian friendly and certainly have some overlap with the issues. Is there something to the L word or the mentality that comes with that? Or what?
No, I think it's just another way right now of branding conservative. You mentioned it. Would I vote for the Libertarian candidate? There should be a viable Libertarian candidate. The Libertarian Party has their branding problems. So I don't think we'd identify publicly necessarily as Libertarian.
Right.
But that certainly we're right of all three of us, even Weld, we're right of Trump on most things. But you can't challenge Trump from the left, which is why Kasich had no path, which is why Romney has no path.
Right. And before I let you go, how are we doing on time here? We should wrap up. What's your take on the both the kind of public behavior and actions of and potential Libertarian Party candidacy of Justin Amash?
Justin's a great guy. We got elected together. I love him. He's true blue. He's a total real deal. What is he going to do? I don't know. I think it'd be great if he considered running as a libertarian. I wish he'd think about running as a libertarian as opposed to an independent.
For president or for Congress or both?
Well, I'd love to see him back in the House as an independent.
Right.
I think he would have a great chance to get his seat back as an independent. That district, people like him. If he's contemplating a run for president, I'd rather see him do it as a libertarian.
Oh, I think that's the only thing that he would consider doing because they are on the ballot in 50 states.
I hear otherwise. Matt, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. And I worry, and I'll pose this as a question to you as we end. As somebody who doesn't want to see Donald Trump get reelected no matter what, no way, no how, I worry almost that any third party candidate might help Trump.
This is unknown and unknowable.
Where are you on that?
I mean, I live in the state of New York, so I'm happy to vote third party and especially Libertarian Party whenever possible, just to my own personal preferences, because I like political competition. If you work back at 2016 and see what was the effect of the Libertarian Party vote and the third party vote, didn't have an effect, not even in Wisconsin.
Really?
Correct. The exit polls that were done on both Green Party candidate Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, more or less break down. Their vote said that 25% would have voted for Hillary, 15% would have voted for Trump, and 60% would not have voted.
Oh, really?
So they brought out people who were not excited by either candidate.
Wow.
And so even so, the 10,000 vote margin, it doesn't cover it enough, even just using Jill Stein herself. However, the handful of polls that have included Amash as a third party candidate, it's been interesting to see what that, because they a couple of them they've asked with and without. And he's taken slightly more from Democrat than
he is.
Yes. So far. I mean, it's way early and who knows how that breaks out there. And it depends. I think there's a difference between it's like an even an age difference. You know, if it's Biden and Trump,
it depends on who the Democrat is.
It's a bunch of old dudes.
Yes.
And like Justin Amash is a lot of things. He's just not an old dude. He's got a little bit of a spring in his step.
Right.
So. It depends on that. We don't know is the long answer. I think if he ran no matter what, Michigan is off the table for Donald Trump, for the Republicans.
I think so.
I mean, how would you go there? So
that's interesting. Okay, cool.
Don't know.
Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Joe Walsh. And we'll see you tonight at the debates.